Hello, everyone, and welcome to another Radical Compliance podcast. I'm Matt Kelly, the editor of Radical Compliance, and thank you for joining us today. Our subject today is compliance programs and specifically how to build up a program that, shall we say, had previously not been as effective as one would have liked. So if you're on some mission to build up an ineffective program, maybe as part of a corporate integrity agreement or just because the board has decided it wants the ethics and compliance program to do better, how do you, the compliance officer, go about that? Joining us to talk about that mission is Dan Garin. He is a longtime compliance officer who's made something of a career in building up or turning around corporate compliance programs. Dan is just coming off a three-year stint as Chief Ethics and Compliance Officer at Vivint. They are a maker of home smart security systems and the like. In the past, Dan has also been a partner at the law firm DLA Piper. He's been the head of compliance at several other firms, mostly in medical devices or electronic manufacturing and that sort of field. And he's got a lot to say on this. So, Dan, welcome. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
Okay, so first question, how would you describe your overall career path? And like, how did you get into this specific line of work in corporate compliance?
Sure. So it's a little different story. I actually started out in pre-med and I worked with cochlear prosthetics. If you're not familiar, that's the thing that looks like a hearing aid, but there's a thing about the size of a half dollar attached to the back of a skull and stuff. I actually stayed with it. And although I was a compliance officer for many years, I actually stayed up with my clinical knowledge and left compliance for a few years and became the head of clinical affairs for all of Siemens Healthcare in the United States. But the two aren't divergent in that I use many of the things that I use for clinical trials and stuff in my compliance area. The way that I approach compliance is really two things. It is data analytics and process optimization. Mm-hmm. And so when we're using data analytics, you go back to clinical trials. Is this drug better than this drug? Is this treatment better than this treatment? I'm doing the same thing in terms of data, in terms of like, okay, how is this process performing the results that we need to, in the engagements I'm in, show the government that whatever we were doing before, we're no longer doing it. And we have the appropriate systems in place to detect if it were or something similar were to occur in the future. And so the two really fit together. In terms of how I got into the turnaround business, it was quite by accident. I was at a law firm during 9/11, and you know, everyone had a little bit of a crisis of conscience and like, what do I want to do and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I took a pay cut, significant, and went to the American Red Cross. And if you recall, they were in trouble for how they handled the blood supply and how they handled the donations that they received. From there, I went to Bayer. Bayer had two corporate integrity agreements and were in danger of getting a third. So I helped them out with that. Then the big one was I worked on Siemens bribery scandal. Now, there were hundreds of people that worked on it. But for the first part of the engagement, I was the point of contact with both DOJ and SEC. And help Siemens navigate through that. And then it was just a string of other engagements for turnaround, whether it be federal monitorships, corporate integrity agreements, or my most recent one, a FTC consent order. And I come to the company and I'm usually there 2 to 4 years, shake hands with the board that I'm gonna get them through it. And then I'm gonna hire my team and I'm going to hire my successor, and then I leave the organization.
You know, let me just ask a follow-up. Like, what do you like about that? Because I can sometimes see the appeal of sort of being a hired gun to fix problems. Other people do like staying with a single company and building up their program for many, many years and watching things go. Like, what appeals to you about this kind of lifestyle?
I like it because it's something new every time, and it's a little bit of a pressure cooker I'm happy to say I've never lost a patient, but it's interesting to really get a company at often its lowest point, get them through it, and put in a sustainable program. And again, I'm very proud of the fact that I've hired my successor in almost every case, and put them in place. And I stay in contact with those companies. Many of the former companies I was with, I still stay in very, very close contact and root from the sidelines for them.
All right, so let's focus a bit more on the actual work. You have been hired at company ABC. They want to improve their program. You had mentioned data analytics and process optimization, and we could talk about that in more detail as necessary. But I'm curious, overall, what do you see as the bad habits or weak practices that companies have that have put them in this predicament of an ineffective compliance program? Like, are there commonalities you see? Like, okay, now I know why they are where they are. Like, how do they get into these predicaments, do you think?
Sure. So the first thing I do is I go on a listening tour. I just try and learn as much as I possibly can about the business before I start touching any of the levers. And that is very intentional work going to the people who are actually operating the controls, operating the business. What I really see from these companies is three main things. First, the people. Do they have the right people in the right places? Do they have the right people to actually make the program function? Two, where does the compliance program sit? In other words, is compliance embedded in the organization or is it operated by a group, in the basement of the building? And then third, which is the most important thing, is culture. What is the culture that they've created? Because if you get the culture right, everything else falls in place. But by the inverse, you get the culture wrong, it is very, very difficult to climb out of whatever brought me to the company.
Those are all good questions to look at and points to consider, but are there certain predicaments or circumstances that, okay, yes, I see a lot that they've got the right people, but in the wrong roles, or vice versa, or that the compliance program had been pushed off to the side and now management wants to pull it back into the center? Like, what are the sort of warning signs or symptoms that you see?
Yeah, that's exactly. I mean, you've answered your own question. Is that's exactly what I see. Is I see a culture that isn't supportive. Too great a focus on one thing to the expense of others. And it's not just the compliance organization. It's like, how does an internal audit work? How does finance work? How are the financial controls in place? Do they understand how to set up a control architecture? Those are all the little pieces, but again, I'm going to drag you back to it really comes down to the culture and the tone from the top. I know we all hear about it over and over again, it becomes trite, but it's true. If you have the right tone from the top, it just goes so much easier.
Okay, so now let's move on. We have done the diagnosis phase and we're in the rebuild and recovery phase. I am also curious about the mechanics of building up the program and like what's hard there. And it's interesting when you do talk about it's the culture and the tone at the top, which I think everybody would agree with. My default is always to think the hard stuff is the tech stuff. If you need to rejigger processes or integrate new software or something like that. And I don't know, is that the hard part or is it adjusting the culture and the tone at the top? Because that seems more amorphous and difficult to get right. But I don't know what is or isn't hard to do there. What's your analysis?
It's not that you move one chess piece and then you move another chess piece. You're pushing a whole bunch of boats in the water at the same time, to mix metaphors here. And what I mean by that is, if you have a culture where, in many cases when I'm coming in, the company is facing an existential crisis or is in a very, very difficult situation. And so they're far more open to the medicine that they need to take at that point. But it doesn't mean that it's an easy fly for me. What I try and do is, as you remarked at the beginning, is I focus on two things: data analytics, process optimization. Let's talk about what that really means. If processes are easy, you're going to have compliance. When processes are hard, would that be submitting expense reports, doing, doing sales prep. That's when you start to have non-compliance. So what I try and do is when I build a team, and we can talk about this more later, is I'm bringing in process engineers, people who are really skilled, particularly at a set of skills called Kaizen. Within Kaizen, there's 17 different disciplines, but that will take apart a process and build it. And it can be, and often is, to the benefit of the business. In other words, it will grow your sales. It will get you, your product to market faster. There's benefits to what we're doing. There's a effect that it helps compliance and hardens the overall compliance system, but it's a win-win type of situation. And so this is not the compliance team sitting in their offices designing a new process. This is the hard work of getting, defining what the problem is, getting people into a room, working the problem all day. And usually we do it for 4 days. And then on the fifth day, we redo a report out to the management team. And then that is the go forward system going forward.
So tell me a little bit more about this, because I do think it is a very good point that optimizing processes is important. On the other hand, I suspect that not a lot of chief compliance officers learned some sort of formal process optimization in chief compliance officer school. So I'm curious, how do they pull that together? Is this something where you beg, borrow, and steal expertise from internal audit, or if you're hiring people for a compliance team, how do you look for that sort of a skill set? And how do you unpack that a bit more for us?
So, I mean, previously, you go back, 30 years, there was no compliance certificate program or anything like that. This is just the further evolution. And where you're really borrowing from the most is manufacturing. It's manufacturing techniques, and that's where Kaizen came from. And within Kaizen, I mentioned there's 17 disciplines. Probably the ones that you use the most are TPI, Total Process Improvement, and VSM, Value Stream Mapping. There are all these other disciplines as well. But what you're trying to do is like, okay, but Dan, we're not manufacturing widgets here. What are you talking about? You actually are. So if you're like, hey, I have a problem with how contracts are coming through and whether or not we're vetting third parties appropriately, you are manufacturing a third party. And so you're looking at the entire thing. So for example, so they can say to you, like, compliance takes too long to review this. And so you do a thing called a TACT. Time analysis. TACT is a German word, TAKT, TACT time analysis. And so you may say, like, okay, how long does it take me to manufacture a contract? Well, it takes me 30 days, takes me a month to do it. Okay, is 30 days okay? Yeah, 30 days is okay. But right now, it's currently taking me 70 days to do it, and therefore compliance sucks. And when you look at it, the TACT time analysis takes apart each individual piece. And so it may say, like, okay, we send the due diligence questionnaire to the third party. They take a look at it. It comes back. We put the, and you have the whole ping pong match. And what you learn is that, like, no, everyone's executing on a 1 day time frame. They're working absolutely as fast as they can. But that first thing, when we send it to the third party and they're supposed to answer the question, it takes them 60 days to turn that back on average. So instead of saying, like, hey, this sucks, you know exactly where you need to focus your attention. And you focus on that piece and getting that third party to respond faster and for them to see the win-win. And it gets the business to buy in for who has the relationship with the third party to be like, listen, you need to pick up the pace. You need to get this done. And that's how you're going to pull that back into specification of getting it to 30 days.
All right. So first, let me say I love that we were using a German word to describe part of a Japanese philosophy for process optimization. We strive to be global at the Radical Compliance Podcast series. Now let me move on a bit. Let's say the process has been optimized, you think, and now you're more trying to monitor it because you had also mentioned data analytics. I kind of assume that's where analytics fits in, is you're trying to study how well things are or are not moving in the right direction. But tell us a bit more about either that or how you do see data analytics fitting into the effectiveness mission that you're on.
I have data and analytics embedded throughout the program. Let me give you a couple examples. I don't report the news. I want to make the news and change the news. So when I turn to a board and I'm like, okay, for this specific metric, we're a six. The board is like, what? What does that mean? Like, is that six out of a million and we should get the board to fly in? Or is that six out of seven and we're doing phenomenal? What does this mean? Further, what do you want this number to be next week, next quarter, next year? Do we want that number to go up? Do we want that number to go down? And so I look at the way the sales team is reporting their numbers. The sales team isn't allowed to say, hey, this quarter, we're going to do our very, very best. Like, no, they're going to grow business by 15%. And then if they grow by 10%, they're able to do an action. They're like, okay, we missed because of this, 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 and this. It's the same thing. And so compliance, you shouldn't be afraid to report on your metrics, whether that be, again, going back to my example, how long it takes to manufacture a third-party contract or whatever. And so depending on what is the focus of the organization or what is their problem. So is it sales to physicians in a healthcare context? Is it the way that they were selling to consumers from an FTC concept? Is it the way that they were qualifying their third parties? And you build a compliance dashboard, and the compliance dashboard should be a one-page sheet that has four or five different metrics. It's still a busy slide, but it's one page. And that gives the board, the management team, and other people in the business the single point of truth. And they know where we're trying to push things. And so the dashboard that could be perfect for a company like Vivint could be missing it entirely for a company like Pfizer. And so you have to adjust and stuff. But I'm using the data analytics again to report the news and to drive the thing. And so that I can get everyone else on board in terms of where we want to go. And that also gives me permission to get resources in order to achieve those results.
Okay, and then last question that is in the guts and the mechanics of it. I want to ask a bit about artificial intelligence, and have you found any practical uses for it in compliance? I know there's a lot of vendors now who say that their compliance product has AI. I know a lot of companies are embedding AI into their processes that you're looking at. So how are compliance officers supposed to harness what AI is or isn't doing out there?
First of all, fighting against AI is like 30 years ago, somebody saying like, well, the internet's going to go away. And so what I would tell every compliance officer is you've got to learn AI. And I mean, in depth, truly in depth. And what that means is a lot of people confuse machine learning and other things. AI is the training of a neural network. And so you have to feed it a ton of data. In talking to the Department of Justice, they're happy if an AI model can produce a 70 to 75 percent hit rate. That 70, 75% of the time, that it's correct. What I've been able to do at most recently at Vivint is to build up an AI model that predicts inappropriate behavior. Let me give you an example. Do I care that a rep has red hair? No, I do not. Do I care that a rep has been with the organization less than a year? Their manager has left within the last 6 months. They're in the Southeast territory and their sales are 10% above normal. No, 5% below normal. Then I create the mathematical equation that goes with it to weight that appropriately. And then it gives me the names of people that are fitting these different criteria. And then I audit them. Where we have been able to get the model to is about 96% hit rate. What that means is 96% of the time when, Dan Guerin's name comes up, there is an issue. That doesn't mean that they're stealing $20 million from the company. It could be like Dan just doesn't know how to submit expense reports correctly, or Dan is just doing X correctly. But there's a 96% hit rate. There is some break within the system. Sometimes it can be quite serious, but often it's just little corrections within the system. That saves tremendous amounts of research. So resources. So as opposed to like having to look at like, you're only going to be able to audit like whatever, 10%, 15% of your sales force, and that's being generous. And you're just trying to like, pull the jelly bean out of the jar here and find the right one. In this way, you're really focusing. You know and you have confidence that something's going on here that's off. And so that's the way that we've been, one of the ways that we've been using AI, but we've been using it for any number of other purposes as well, but can be extremely powerful and effective for the compliance team and is very, very much appreciated by management and the board.
Okay. And then I guess maybe the last question I have is, how do you, sitting in the chief compliance officer seat, like, how do you know that you have achieved victory and you now have an effective program? Whether that's for somebody specifically like you, who knows, now I can move on, or a CCO just wants to stay there but knows I'm on an effective program. Like, how do they figure out that, yes, we have turned this around and the ship is now moving at appropriate speed in the right direction? How do you figure that out?
One thing goes back to the metrics. So, are you driving the metrics in the right direction? You're always going to have errors. You're never going to drive it down to zero. But, like, have you achieved what you felt was important at the beginning? So, that's one piece. Second piece is often when you come in, you have to throw a lot of people at it, and then you're able to put processes and other things in place. So, do you have the right size compliance program to run it? And then, third, what I would say is that compliance becomes an advisor to the business, but compliance is embedded within the company. In other words, they're coming to you to ask you for advice, but they're asking intelligent questions from a point of knowledge. And it's only on the difficult edge cases that they really need compliance's support. That's when I know that it's time to leave the organization.
All right. Well, Dan, that's all the time we have today, but you gave us a lot to think about, covered an awful lot of ground. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
And again, everybody, that was Dan Garen, longtime senior compliance officer at numerous companies, most recently at Vivint. And he was talking with us today about how to build up a compliance program and make sure that it is operating to your CCO satisfaction. That is all for this podcast. I'm Matt Kelly, editor of Radical Compliance. Thank you all for listening, and I hope you'll join us again next time.